Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today we're talking about analog media, newspapers, comics, VHS video, and 16mm film, all those great formats you could once hold in your hand but have become harder to find in the 21st century. Ian Sundahl is a cartoonist, filmmaker, curator, and the co-publisher of the Vision Quest free comics newspaper. His long-running series Repressed Cinema screens once a month at Portland's Hollywood Theater. Tim Goodyear is the other co-publisher of Vision Quest and the founder of the Teenage Dinosaur imprint, which printed the early works of Matt Fury, Dash Shaw, and Julia Gaffrere. And Emily Nilsson is a writer and artist and zinester whose work appears regularly in Vision Quest. She was a mainstay of Portland's legendary publisher, Sparkplug Comic Books. Ian, Tim, Emily, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Hi, Conch.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's see. Ian, I'll start with you. You've been putting on regular screenings at the Hollywood Theater for many years now. You have a major collection of psychotronic films, classic television clips, and low-budget oddities. Tell us a little bit about Repressed Cinema.
Oh, well, the tagline I use is, if it's obscure and neglected from the fringe, it would describe the films I play. It's just stuff I've been pulling from my collection and occasionally trying to play some contemporary things, but it's usually has one film on film element, 16mm, 35mm. Like you said, it plays once a month. It's every third Tuesday. And it's been a lot of fun. Every month we sell underground comics in the lobby too.
Yeah, you're very much into comics and zines published on actual paper. You guys have all been part of the Portland Zine Symposium, which still believes in distributing stuff that's ink and paper. It's DIY, it's do-it-yourself, and it's oftentimes kind of cheap, or in some cases free.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's just a matter of going to the copy shop yourself or, going to a printer and getting things done.
And this upcoming episode of Repressed Cinema is called Comics and Comics, the latter word with an X at the end. I guess a portion of the show's proceeds will benefit Vision Quest, the production of the free comics newspaper.
That's correct. This month's show, I can tell you a little bit about it. It's an examination of 16mm films inspired by or about comic strips, comic books, and contemporary underground comics. So I'm going to have some oddball stuff that's not only inspired by, but about comics. And at the end, there's going to be a thing Tim and I shot looking at the local underground comic artist, Bobby Madness, an interview we shot. So if you like sequential art, you want to hit up the show.
Yeah, you've got a couple of things that are going way back. One of the films is Dream of a Rarebit Fiend that goes back more than a century. It's based on the Winsor McCay comic strip. He also did Gertie the Dinosaur, which is considered one of the first animated films.
Yeah, that's really a fun film. Really just absolutely strange and bizarre imagery from that time period.
And you also really like old movie serials and TV shows like Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yeah, there was actually a TV show based on Ripley's Believe It or Not before the 70s version. I think this was from the early 60s, kind of a TV filler thing. There's also one other notable short I'll play. It was the first adaptation of an EC comic book story from, this was from like, I think 1966. It was unlicensed and William Gaines actually saw it in a theater and contacted the filmmakers and told them to give them credit. So it's way before Vault of Horror or Tales from the Crypt, but it's pretty interesting.
So this was the same William Gaines that started Mad Magazine, and he had a whole bunch of shock and horror comics back before Mad came along.
Yep, exactly.
So yeah, let's keep talking about comics here, because Tim and Ian, let's see, you started the comics newspaper Vision Quest, and you believe in free and low-cost publications. So you came up with an interesting model for publishing and distribution. Tim, as I understand it, each one of the artists takes a very active role in getting the paper out into the community?
Yeah, this is a recipe we actually picked up from our friends up in Seattle who did a paper called The Intruder. That was Max Klotfelter and Mark Palm and a bunch of other cartoonists up there. Those are the two that I knew that were sort of the linchpin of it. And they shared with us that sort of simple stone soup recipe, which pretty much just pays for their page. But in essence, we all get a much bigger print run for our book than we would if we spent that $40 on photocopies or some other method of distribution. And so that would really just increase the readership. So I think it's been pretty beneficial.
So each artist gets a page for $40, but that doesn't stop there. They're also expected to take a stack of papers and find a home for them.
Well, it's definitely our hope and our desire that they do that because, yeah, my laundry room is full already. Ian and I just have a whole bunch already lugging up our houses. So it is better if people can do it, but we don't police it. But yeah, the idea would be that each one of them would have their own little nooks and crannies in the world, their own little favorite cafe or, little library boxes on their block that they would, mail them to their friends or maybe throw it in with mail orders or something. And just that it would sprinkle into the world in everybody's own little way. And then it would sort of increase people's knowledge of more cartoonists.
Well, is there a gatekeeper to what kind of content goes into Vision Quest? You know, do you have some standards and practices?
Well, gosh.
Ian, you want to tell him sort of like what that age is?
Yeah, we make sure it's comics, not just an image. So sequential art, not porn level, but, mature content is okay. I don't know. What else, Tim? Hand lettering?
Hand lettering is not a deal breaker, but it's exceptionally preferential and would probably put you over somebody else if we had to bump somebody to the next issue. It would be a strong plus for that person. The only other number is that we require it to be a vertically oriented page format, portrait style, not widescreen or landscape.
So, Emily, you've been with Vision Quest for quite a while now.
Yeah. I haven't been in all of them. I've kind of lost track of how many I've been in, but I think it's at least half. Since it's been a couple of years since it came out, I haven't added up my total.
Is there a theme to like what you like to contribute to Vision Quest as opposed to like other projects that you do?
It's been a little bit experimental for me because I don't really consider myself a comics person as much as Tim and Ian and a lot of our friends. As far as being a creator, I'm kind of a newcomer to it. So I felt like I was doing a lot of improvising. And the first page I submitted to Vision Quest was, it was a little bit against the rules. It was kind of just a page full of illustrations, but it had kind of a narrative quality to it. And then the next time I was in it, I did an actual story. I did a comic based on a fictionalized version of a story I heard from Kembra Fowler of Voluptuous Horror of Karen Black. I don't know if you know who she is, but I did a little story based off of something she said about her childhood experience growing up in Hawaii. And then like the next, I think the running theme of the things I submit usually has something to do with music in a peripheral way. For a while, I was doing a series of four stories that were based off of Dylan's, Dylan did a series of books in the early 90s called Horse. And when he was still alive, he talked about kind of wanting to do a comic that was based off of Horse. And he never did that. The comics he did do were inspired by those stories, but I took my own interpretation of it and I decided to do it on my own. And it was kind of for me, that was kind of a process of healing, using the storytelling to tell my own story in a little bit of a surreal way, and base those stories off of Dylan's comics and include some panels from his comics. And I incorporated some music and lyrics into the scripts of those comics. So I, for some reason, I keep coming back to music as sort of a inspiration to some of the storylines for the work I do.
And we're talking about your late husband, Dylan Williams, who you were both mainstays of the comics community, the underground and DIY and up and coming comics community back in the day. You had the Bad Apple store down on Foster. And yeah, tell us a little bit more about those days.
Well, Dylan started the Bad Apple with Tim in 2008 or 9. It had been running a couple years before I came on board. And they started the store right next door to Guapo Comics and Coffee when that was still there. And the idea was that they weren't going to sell comics because Guapo was selling comics, but they wanted to sell books and DVDs and artwork and balance artistically with Guapo Comics and Coffee with more forms of media. So after Dylan passed, I kind of started running it accidentally. I almost came into running Sparkplug as sort of I had to tie up loose ends anyway, and it became, we decided we were going to go forward and publish the books that Dylan had meant to publish. And I ended up running it with Virginia, who had been working for Sparkplug already for over a year. And then Virginia took over the business of running Sparkplug for another year or so. So I kind of fell into it, you know. I was very fortunate to know Dylan and be his partner and be connected to this huge community of comic artists. And there was already a community when we moved to Portland, but as time went by, more of our friends from out of state started moving to Portland, and the community grew from there. So there began to be more conventions, and the Zine Symposium gained momentum year by year. And it was just a really exciting thing to witness as time went by.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And we're talking today about analog media, newspapers, comics, VHS video, and 16mm film. My guests today are Ian Sundahl, Tim Goodyear, and Emily Nilsson. So we've had a pandemic, and we had a lot of shutdowns of brick and mortar stores. And how did that affect some of the publishing that you folks have been responsible for, like, for example, Vision Quest?
Well, yeah, with Vision Quest, I think it became more an issue of who's going to come and get the papers, you know? How are we going to get them out if everyone's staying in? And obviously the answer is to ship it, and that would really change our cost structure. I don't think we were really appropriately set up to go into some sort of large shipping situation. So yeah, we've actually had an issue sort of in waiting this entire time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just sort of getting all of the plates spinning again, getting all the balls in the air. But yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of the small press publishing community is really connected to doing shows, and shows were pretty froze up there for a while. It seems like now there's sort of, some are coming back. I think we probably lost some shows though, and maybe didn't really realize it yet. I know we lost stores and we lost publishers and we lost shows, and that's really
rough.
The
Eagles Lodge is gone now too.
Right, the Eagles Lodge here in town sold during the quarantine, and that was a location that we would hold the Frankenstein's comic book swap in, and we would also do the comics thing event there in the evenings. So it's been interesting. Some people were very busy during quarantine working on their art, but it seems like a significant amount of people sort of had their creative powers or their imagination sort of corrupted by worry. And I think that really dominated a lot of people.
Yeah, I think something about the pandemic kind of moved people to shift more towards digital content.
Yeah, I feel like that's because, you know, you sort of are just dealing with your own end of it, your one device that you're rubbing your hands all over, and maybe you're letting your like cat or your family do that too, but you sort of wind up dealing with the world in that very sort of glassy, isolated fashion. It's very weird to see that people have given up on doing different forms of advertising. It seems like posters are not recognized and handbills are not recognized, even for print events, you know, like comic shows. There have been a number of comic shows since quarantine, and I haven't seen any posters or handbills for them at the comic shop. And that's surprising to me because, you know, when you're running a comic book show, you're not running an internet comic book show.
And poster art is its own kind of art anyway. It's an art form all its own.
It's true. Yeah. And I think it has a different idea of advertising than you get on the digital device. And I'm sure they both have their strengths.
Well, Tim, one of your many hats is you have been running events for a long time that include the Frankenstein comic book swap and the VHS swaps that happen around town.
The VHS swap was sort of like a friendly, like almost like babysitting team up kind of situation. Andy Johnson and I do that Frankenstein swap organizing, and it just turned out that the venue said, well, you paid for the day, so it goes until the bar closes at 2:30 the first time we let it go. And then I went home and I just thought about it and thought, geez, you know, it'd be cool. Just invite everybody to come and hang out and take over that spot. And they had cheap beers and stuff like that. So it just seemed like an easy thing to do. So it was more like a swap meet clubhouse kind of friendly hangout thing. And we'd make posters, and that's why when the VHS swap kind of came unanchored from its previous event, Jason Levian asked me if I wanted to take over that stuff. And I love the sort of VHS culture, you know, just show up, you know, this is the show, and it is whoever shows up.
So Ian, you're part of a group of collectors who really enjoy analog film, 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter film, even 8 millimeter film. There's material on there that hasn't been digitized, that hasn't gone on to DVD, to Blu-ray. And the same goes, Tim, for VHS. There's stuff on VHS that nobody will ever convert or upgrade to a more modern format. So there's a whole collector's society that looks for these obscure creations before they all get dumpstered.
That's true. Yeah, and a lot of these, I make that a point of on my write-ups sometimes to mention, you know, you can't see these on YouTube. It gives you a reason to come to the theater. You know, it's going to the theater is a real different experience than watching something on your computer or your phone. Yeah, it's just really obscure stuff still out there in the wild.
And it's a social gathering as well. You know, you have a different experience of something strange and offbeat and obscure if you're watching it in a room full of people who are also fans of that idiom.
Yeah, it's a real shared experience type thing. And it makes you feel like you're in a club or something, having seen something for the first time in a long time, maybe in one evening.
There's actually a number of collectors in town of old film, but you know, nowadays a lot of it is sold online, eBay, places like that. What's your community look like of film curators and collectors?
Yeah, there is some local collectors here in town I'm friends with, and we sometimes swap films or have shows. But yeah, it's really changed in terms of procurement of the goods. It used to be you'd have to send away through the mail to get a film or wait for a list in the mail. But yeah, everything's online. So there's a few like collectors forums where people list things for sale. And then, of course, eBay is the easy thing to do. But it's also kind of good in a way because if you're looking for something super specific, you can find it, you know, on eBay, or if you give it enough time. Sometimes it was sort of hit or miss with the mail thing, dealing with collectors back in the old days.
And Tim, you have a guide to films on VHS. It's called Video Tonfa. It's published by Floating World Comics. And it started out as a sketchbook and journal that you kept of your movie viewing.
I think guidebook would probably not be terminology to use there. I think, yeah, like journal or memoir, maybe apropos, or a sketchbook. It's sort of like that. Yeah, I'll do a little drawing of the video box that I watched, and then put my thoughts where they would typically put a synopsis. Yeah, it's probably more of a bathroom book than a reference book, you know?
And for our listeners who might be wondering, where does the title come from, Video Tonfa?
I had written it on the sketchbook where I started drawing them during the midst of that sketchbook. So I was just started sort of referring to them as such. Yeah, a tonfa is a baton that's got a little extra arm on it. I believe it derives from the Philippines. And I just thought it was like a cool defensive, offensive sort of shield staff kind of thing. And a word that nobody was familiar with. It had a very singular thing. I felt people might be actually curious about it.
And there's a lot of classic, well, what people might call B-movies are part of the collection in there.
Right. Well, you had mentioned this with Ian also. It's like sort of the collecting thing, or the movies that may not go from one format to the next. And so that's going to be true, I think, with like most art forms, is that we're gonna lose something. But what was interesting, I think we got a lot of people got to like share their own personal movies or make movies that couldn't have had their movies seen before the 80s, the video store, the VHS. So I think that's an interesting thing for us to sort of pursue. You know, we have I think it's just like an instinct to like hunt and gather for us. And we have stores, you know, so it's not like we have to really go hunting too hard. And so, yeah, it makes sense that, you know, let's document or find those lost pieces of art, you know, that are sort of sliding away. This was more experiential than anything like that. It's not a cultivation. There was, at some point, I watched the movies faster than I could document them. So stuff was left out if it didn't look cool or if I didn't like it. And so certain movies would just go in because I thought the box was nice and I wanted to draw that. It just seemed like a cool box, you know?
And I wanted to tie in, Tim, I did want to mention your imprint, Teenage Dinosaur, partly because Bobby Madness, we mentioned Bobby Madness earlier. He's a comics chronicler of Portland going way back many, many years. And Ian is going to be screening a little short about Bobby Madness. But yeah, you've published Bobby Madness. You published the first issue of Boys Club by Matt Fury, yes. Who went on to become quite famous for Pepe the Frog, Julia Grefer's first work, Dash Shaw's first work. It seems like you've really jumped
on a those last two were early works, maybe.
Okay,
They got some stuff out before me.
But you really gave a jump start to a lot of the new alternative comics crowd that's out there nowadays.
Well, and of the three that you mentioned, it is apropos that you mentioned them because Dashaw was the first comic that I published as Teenage Dinosaur. So that's the first in that relationship. That's probably more my first. Dash had done a book called Love Eats Brains before that, and Gardenhead also. I think the thing is all three of those cartoonists are really very strong artists who really step forward with their work. And so the deal that I have is that I give the artists half the print run so we don't have some kind of dangling financial idea related to a comic that's sort of a drag. So those artists all took those comics and really pushed them forward and pushed themselves forward and continue to make projects that made that stuff work out. Yeah, and to mix results for everybody.
Well, I'm going to ask what's next in this post-COVID reality for all of you. Like, the way that the community interacts has changed, but it sounds like you're still all totally committed to moving the media community forward, the DIY ethic forward, traditional publishing. Emily, what's next for you?
Well, I took part in a comic about the life of, oh, what is his name? The German opera singer guy.
Klaus Nomi?
Yes, thank you. Yes, Liz Yerby, who is a graduate of the Independent Publishers Resource Center comics program, has been doing comics regularly for years now and has published a few books and has collected and edited two bio comics that I took part in. The first one was a one about Dolly Parton, and I did a couple pages for that, and then I contributed a page to the Klaus Nomi comic, which it's going to be out soon. So that was fun and exciting. I'm very excited about being part of the next Vision Quest.
So Tim, the new Vision Quest, it's going to be bigger than ever, it sounds like.
Essentially, this is the issue that's been trapped in Amber. So the next issue is going to be a new masthead. So it will appear to be different post-quarantine.
And Ian, let's hear all about Repressed Cinema and the upcoming show at the Hollywood Theater.
The Comic and Comics film show will be November 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater. There's no Repressed for December, and January, I have no idea what I'll play. It's just kind of a month-by-month thing, but I look forward to putting out some more comics and getting a Vision Quest out now that there's places open to receive them.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we've been talking today about analog media, newspapers, comics, VHS video, and 16mm film. My guests today have been Ian Sundahl, Tim Goodyear, and Emily Nilsson. Ian, Tim, Emily, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Conch.
Thank you very much for having me.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about events that you do and the work that you publish, where's a good place to look?
I don't have a website currently, but TurboOverdrive.com has a link to a non-existent Instagram page for me.
So yeah, I don't have a website either. So, doing pretty good. You can just, it's my name at Gmail if you need to get a hold of me, or I am at the Columbia Floating World from Sunday through Wednesday. So go on down.
So this is very serious when we're talking about non-digital media. No fooling around here.
This is it's not an act.
Well, thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture. Thank you.